the Auto Trotter, Science versus Religion and the Controversy over Texas Science Book Science Textbook Standards.
Which one do I click to make it go? Minimize ribbon? There we go. Some of you are under the impression that you're here to hear a talk on the relationship between science and religion in the Texas Science Textbook Controversy. It may be that this talk has been preempted. I don't know if you heard the news or not, but we understand that Richard Dawkins and Bill Dembski have been invited to the White House. The president has decided that one more beer summit will probably smooth over all these problems. But since they haven't quite preempted me yet, let's see if we can go ahead with this. Should you be concerned? I think we're going to talk about why you should be, how the Texas system works, what the arguments were, what the politics and outcome were, and what the future may hold. Why does the concern go beyond Texas? Texas has a system in which adopted texts must cover the Texas essential knowledge and skills, and we'll come back to that scheme of TEKS later on. Texas is the country's biggest unified textbook publisher. Publishers benefit from economies of scale, so Texas selections affect national availability. Now, as this story unfolds, I hope that you will keep in mind just exactly what is it that is going on here. Is someone pushing a metaphysical view? Is there favoring of indoctrination versus education? Or are they advocating sound science? Or is there a confusing mix? Some of the context you've already picked up from Dr. Bergman's presentation, but let's go back and take a look. Prior to 1981, Texas had no standards for textbooks. In 1981, they adopted essential elements. An interesting thing also happened in 1981. 1981 was the year that the National Center for Science Education was founded, an EVO evolutionary advocacy group that I think most of you are familiar with. In 1985, Texas adopted strengths and weaknesses as a requirement inside the essential elements. This was really a response creationism. As a sop to those who wanted to teach creationism, the standard was introduced that the strengths and weaknesses of theories should be taught. In 1987, there was a famous Edward versus Aguillard case. It was decided that no parallel creationism could be taught in Louisiana. In 1995, Texas added another requirement to the essential elements, that textbooks contain no factual errors. In 1997, what was formerly in the essential elements was incorporated into our essential knowledge and skills requirements. 1999, interesting case in Kansas. They argued about the teaching of evolution. They decided that evolution could still be taught, but in the exit exams for the students, they didn't have to answer any questions on evolution. In 2001, Texas has an eight-year cycle. We'll talk about that. The Texas standards continued to contain strengths and weaknesses requirement and no factual errors. This brings us up to history going back to 2003. It's a cycle worth talking about, but let's talk about who are the people that have been involved in these discussions in Texas. A group that has been against the inclusion of strengths and weaknesses language in Texas includes the National Center for Science Education, the Texas Freedom Network, which is sort of the Texas ACLU, and an organization targeted just at the issues of science. Four strengths and weaknesses, as you would expect, the Discovery Institute, a Texas Free Market Foundation, it's sort of a broad conservative lobbying group, the counterpart to Texas Freedom Network, and the Texans for Better Science Education organization, of which I'm the spokesman. Moving on, in 2003, comparing against the standards established, the biology textbooks were reviewed. And the issue then was not really strengths and weaknesses. The issue was errors in the textbooks. And you might gather that those who like strengths and weakness language were testifying that there are indeed errors in the biology textbooks. Those who eventually wound up opposing strengths and weaknesses language argued, no, there are not any errors. It turns out that the technical issues that were raised were beyond the scope of the professional staff at the Texas Education Agency. So they let a contract to the biology department at Texas A&M to evaluate the testimony that had been presented. Some errors were confirmed, and that impacted the textbooks in that cycle. The 2005 Dover, Pennsylvania case has been referred to before. It was a case in which there was an advocacy for the teaching of intelligent design. In Texas, there was no advocacy of teaching intelligent design and no advocacy of teaching creationism. In 2007, Kansas reversed a previous decision. The process is political. A new board was elected, and the 2005 directive allowing criticism of evolution was struck. Let me wet my whistle here and we'll go on. There's more than one view on what the history might have looked like. Some of you may have read Ken Miller's Only a Theory, book came out last year. He's also got a view of the context of what's transpired in this area. Not surprisingly, he equates ID with creationism. He envies ID's political position, the fact that most of the people in the country are receptive to the notion of intelligent design. He is not particularly happy with that. This was the interesting assertion that ID risks America's scientific soul. He has a couple of chapters in which he goes over the depredations that postmodern thinking and relativism has had on a lot of the academic community. And he says it is the objective of intelligent design to introduce that sort of relativism into science. That was a new thought for me. And he covers the cases in Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, and Mississippi to some degree, but he really focuses on the Dover, Pennsylvania trial where he was the initial and the key testifier. And he has an interesting take on the Dover case. He says the Dover case was ID's Gettysburg, the high water mark. ID will be in retreat from there on, is his view. Now, we're here in Texas, and he only made passing mention of Texas. And we find that mildly offensive. And we feel that way particularly in view of the substantive arguments in play. Because what had happened in Texas in 2003 was materially different from any of the actions that had gone on before. Keep in mind, there was no advocacy of teaching creationism, no advocacy of teaching ID, and the real argument was, teach more evolution, teach it better. The problems that Dr. Bergman described about teachers being unwilling to teach because whichever position they take, they're going to get slashed from some other side, is a real problem. And our feeling is, if we can get the standards cleared up to the point where the teachers know what they're supposed to teach and they know what has been authorized by the state, then they can teach. Now, we also feel that in the course of doing that teaching, it would be good not to exaggerate the explanatory power of evolution. To a degree, that's debatable what that is. Now, keep in mind that the cycle in Texas was just beginning to get rolling in 2008. Nothing really had hit yet until in June, there was a New York Times editorial that really fired the opening shot of what was taking place or about to take place in Texas. There's the editorial, "The Cons of Creationism." The argument from the New York Times was that the problem is creationists. Who are creationists? Are there folks that struggle with reality? I remember when I was actually doing active research, I had to struggle with reality too, but that's not the implication that they meant. They insist the earth is young, and they believe natural selection is false. Now, those last two points certainly don't describe me and maybe don't describe too many other people who think of themselves in a certain sense as creationists. But that, you can look at the editorial if you like. I've extracted this from it. It does say those things. The New York Times made some assertions about weaknesses. They said that it was adopted because it sounds more balanced than the teaching of ID. Well, they didn't know their history. I think I just showed you when Strengths and Weaknesses was introduced into the Texas Standards. ID was a low glow on the horizon at best back when that language was introduced. Others are likely to follow. That's true. But this is code for teaching creationism. And that mantra will show up again and again. The argument is over language in this particular critical thinking clause in the Texas Standards. Analyze, review, and critique scientific explanations, including hypotheses and theories as to their strengths and weaknesses. And my red for scientific doesn't show up, but it's to be analyzed using scientific evidence. Now, the Times assertions about that statement are this. Weaknesses means teaching creationism. If you can teach creationism on the basis of science, they might be right. The creationist system is faith, not science. This is the phrase that set the tone for everything that was going to take place. Students need to accept the elegant truth of evolution as it has itself evolved. Accept. Now, I've taken the liberty of inserting in here what, if this had been a Fox News program, balanced. Let's go here. I would have much preferred to see them state that the student needed to understand how the elegant structure of nature is comprehended. Acceptance was the mantra. Other sciences, by the way, simply weren't covered. Let's look at how the system works in Texas. We have a state board of education. It's a political entity elected from 15 districts in Texas. They have 4-year terms, a 2-year cycle. There's continuity. There are 10 Republicans. 7 of them are social conservatives. The ugly political fact was that there had been previous liberal-conservative debates, and the conservative side had prevailed, wanting more drill in math and wanting more phonics in reading. Why liberals opposed, that's not particularly clear to me, but they were upset because they didn't win. There are 5 Democrats. The way the system works is the 8-year cycle I mentioned before. It interacts with the Texas Education Agency, and the way the thing works, the TEA will develop a draft of standards. It'll be an amendment modification of the one that it had for the previous 8 years. This then is subject to public hearings before the state board, and the way it works, on a certain date, you dial a number. If you get your name on the list, you get to testify. The standards are then set based on the testimony, and the next part of the cycle is that for each of the sciences, the Texas Education Agency will review texts that have been submitted. And there will be public hearings conducted, and certain texts will be adopted. Now, we've gone through this part, but that's not the end of the story. Local boards have the final determination in Texas as to what will be used in their districts. Public school funds will pay for the textbooks that are on the adopted list. So that's why Texas is the biggest unified buyer of textbooks. Now let's look at what happened in the drafting cycle. September the 15th, the TEA issued its proposed drafts for the year. Chemistry was unchanged. It's the same thing I showed you before. Here's the interesting point. Biology was revised. And we'll show a detailed comparison so you can see what they did to it. Chemistry, analyze, review, and critique scientific explanations as to their strengths and weaknesses using scientific evidence. For biology, analyze and evaluate, but don't critique. Forget about strengths and weaknesses using empirical evidence and logical reasoning. Now, chemistry, physics, earth and space science, other sciences all had the chemistry formulation, which was the formulation that had been in place for 18 previous years in Texas. Is there a pattern here? The National Center for Science Education has targeted Texas since 2003. Their focus is evolution. New York Times fired NSCE's opening shot. The new teaks from the TEA drafting teams mirrors the NSCE's focus on evolution. They revised biology, but not the other sciences. Now, folks, that was an oops moment in Texas. The fact that strengths and weaknesses were only removed from biology, that disparity re-energized the conflict in Texas. Questions were raised regarding the special treatment of biology. Quick like a bunny, the Texas Education Agency produced a new version of the standards. Guess what? They decided they didn't want strengths and weaknesses in any of the sciences. Level the playing field. Okay, the hearing cycle starts. There are three different sets of hearings. November was the first. There was testimony favoring the draft standard. That's the one that takes out strengths and weaknesses. And by and large, the arguments were religious beliefs will be taught as science if that language is continued. Expensive litigation will result, and the state will be unable to attract high-tech industry. Board made some observations, and they asked some questions. They pointed out that the language had been in place for 18 years. They asked where had there been science classes teaching religion, or where had the cases, the litigation resulted, and there wasn't any. And they observed that these hearings were being conducted in Austin, which is sort of Silicon Valley Central in the U.S. It's a very high-tech place. So they ask, what's different now? No satisfactory answer. The outcome of the hearings, though, was politically determined. 8-7, the draft was approved. Eliminated strengths and weaknesses from all sciences. But an interesting thing was done. They decided to bring in some experts to testify. What they did was decide on three testifiers who favored strengths and weaknesses and three who went the other way. So this led us to the January hearings. The public testimony, Eugenie Scott sort of led the pack for NSCE. She testified the meaning of weaknesses changed. It now means code for religious views. There are no weaknesses in evolutionary theory, and the supporters of weaknesses naturally didn't agree with that. They say all theories have weaknesses, and limitations of evolutionary theory should not be hidden, and that science advances by exploring weaknesses and understanding. They also had the panel of experts testify. Let's just see who they were. There were three favoring the new draft language. We'll come back to David Hillis. Gerald Skog of Texas Tech gave a general appreciation of evolution. Ronald Wetherington, an anthropologist from SMU, dwelt primarily on the evolution of man. And on the other side, the three favoring the original language, Stephen Meyer, you pretty well know his story. Ralph Selke talked about his work in trying to produce mutations. And Charles Garner, who's here at this meeting, he's a chemistry professor at Baylor, talked about the chemical imponderables in the origin of life. Let's talk about Dr. Hillis. He's perhaps the most interesting testifier in the series. He represented himself as a leading expert on the tree of life. He's a biological systematist. And his testimony was that there is overwhelming correspondence with protein to protein, DNA sequence to DNA sequence, and that means that morphologically and molecularly, the trees should be in agreement. That was surprising for a number of reasons. Remember, this is 2009 testimony. In 2003, Ken Miller's biology textbook actually has a student exercise that shows a disagreement between the chemical and the morphological tree. The Campbell-Reese 2008 AP biology text, which is in use now, even goes so far as to have Doolittle's Bush of Life. Now, here's the thing that really was unfortunate for Dr. Hillis. The very day that he testified that molecular phylogenies agreed and confirmed morphological phylogenies, The New Scientist published that cover. If you can read, it says, Darwin was wrong, cutting down the tree of life. Now, you can imagine that produced a big storm. 3 weeks later, there was a rebuttal article that appeared. I punched that one too soon, folks. There was a rebuttal article that appeared in The New Scientist, signed by Dennett, Dawkins, Myers, and Coyne. And basically it said, yeah, you got the science right, but what in the world was on your mind when you put out that cover? They're already using that in Texas. Everybody knows that the tree of life is no longer a stately oak. It is now a banyan tree. The Dawkins new tree of life is the banyan tree. The March hearing results. Strengths and weaknesses were again defeated on political lines. That means that the movement by the conservatives to restore strengths and weaknesses languages didn't pass. That left the document submitted by the agency on the table, and the conservatives made two modifications to that, passed 13-2. And for the first time, based in part on Garner's testimony, let me back up and show you that, we now have a brand new standard on the origin of life. Never had one before. Let's look at the standard that was adopted. It's really cumbersome language. We'll look at it in detail in just a minute. But the important thing to note is where one scientific wasn't enough to make it a scientific argument before, we've got three scientifics in there now. So let's compare the wording. Here's the TEA draft. And here's the adopted version. They'll show you the modifications. We restored critique. Left this part the same. And added the requirement that we examine all sides of scientific evidence of those scientific explanations. Now, what was the reaction to that? Were the original weaknesses, requirements, religious? Was scientific evidence was required? Is the new wording better or worse? Does it reflect sound science practice? Is it conducive to understanding science? Or might it also be deemed religious? Let's look at the other TEKS that were adopted. This is the component within biology requiring the understanding of how complex molecules might have originated and have a discussion of how information might have been encoded in DNA. And there's a specific requirement in earth and space sciences to deal with the hypothesis for the origin of life. What were public reactions? The Dallas News reporter made the mistake of leaving the testimony room before everything was done. So in its usual adherence to what goes on, the Dallas News reported the next day on the front page, "Conservatives lose another battle over evolution." The Wall Street Journal, interestingly enough, got it right. "Texas opens classroom door for evolution doubts." Eugenie Scott says, "The final vote was a triumph of ideology and politics over science." And June the 12th, Science, "Scientists view the new version as more insidious." Political reactions, 15 bills were introduced in the Texas legislature to strip the SBOE of its authority over standards and texts, and also over the $20 billion pot of money that pays for the textbooks. The conservative chairman's renomination was blocked. One bill passed, and what it did was remove authority for electronic materials from the state board and vest them in the authority of an appointed rather than elected commissioner. What are the next rounds going to be? Everybody is going to be lobbying the publishers. The Wall Street Journal on July the 14th, still following this, points out the Texas market is huge, publishers aggressively seek approval of the SBOE, and sometimes adopt editing suggestions verbatim. Governor Perry subsequently appointed one of the social conservatives to serve as chairman for the next 2 years. The biology textbooks hearings will begin in 2010. Here's an interesting political ramification. 8 districts are up for re-election along this time. 5 of the liberals and 3 of the conservatives will be standing for re-election. And a powerhouse liberal has already been put up against the former conservative chairman of the board. Final adoption will come in 2011. So what I'd like you to think about is, might there be a win-win outcome so everyone can be happy with what takes place? Most of biology is not an issue. I mean, these biology books are thick, and the parts of them that either overstate claims for explanatory power of evolution or muddy the water over the origin of life are not a really big part of the books. My proposal is teach biology like physics. I think you have sensed all the excitement that goes here in the physics area about multiverses, dark energy. I mean, they get excited about that stuff. And what I think it would be nice to do is to teach biology so it's exciting for high school students. Who likes to be indoctrinated? What impact will this have on the treatment of evolution? Most of it will not be changed. There's going to be argument about what are the excessive conjectures, but maybe some of those could be tamed down just to placate the folks in Texas. Acknowledge the issues in the literature. That was one of the big arguments back in 2003. First, the argument was, well, graduate students in university can know these things, then maybe undergraduates in university can know these things. But finally, it was agreed that if Ken Miller could put it in his book, maybe the students can know about those things. Describe things we don't know, not as roadblocks, but as research challenges. Clarify the status of the origin of life, and explicitly exclude ID and creationism. So, as we wrap up, what was going on?
Subject and advocate the subject. How do you do that? not appearing to be promoting the worldview instead of just the mechanics of science.
There were various teachers actually that testified about the problems that they had had in presenting it. I think Dr. Bergman has laid out the problems that the teachers face. My feeling is that in Texas, because of the way the teachers are required to show that they have covered every standard, and by the way, the publishers will provide teachers in Texas with a teacher's text, and what the kids see will be sort of squeezed out, and in the margin it'll be, say, this is Teach 3A Biology, this is Teach 9. And so I think with good standards, it will be possible to clearly teach those parts of evolution. I realize some people don't like the term microevolution, but from microevolution down, the story is solid and should be taught in a very convincing way. The fuzz occurs when you get to speciation, or as I ask, has anybody ever heard about genusation? But there's going to be give and take and negotiation on how that's presented. But the hope would be that with clarity in standards that everybody has agreed to, the teachers would be free to really teach. That's the objective. It is unfortunate if Texas students or any students, because there is disagreement about the non-scientific aspects of evolution, that the scientific aspects cannot be well taught. The motto of my group, Texans for Better Science Education, is teach more evolution, teach it better. Which I can't remember exactly which ones the A&M group went with other than Haeckel's embryos. You know, Haeckel's embryos has been up for grabs for a long time, but in one of the new textbooks I reviewed, it doesn't show the pictures. It talks about the molecular correspondence at various states of development. So there are ways to use the material that is truly representative of what science best thinks. Generally, they sort of follow along the line of, if you're going to show the Miller-Urey experiment, you need to point out a couple things. One, they didn't produce all the molecules, and they were all racemic. You know, we have the interesting property of being made of left-handed proteins and right-handed carbohydrates. And as a guy who used to work in polymerization chemistry, I can tell you, if you start off with a racemic mixture, you're going to get a really mixed-up polymer.